Good morning. Sunday morning. Has the bottom fallen out of your bucket yet? When we chant the female teachers, the last one that we chant is Chiyono. I don't know if you know her, but she's the one who gave us that beautiful teaching. She was a 13th century servant in a Zen convent, and she really wanted to practice Zazen. And so one day she approached an elderly nun and she asked, "I am of humble birth. I can't read or write, and I must work all the time. Is there any possibility that I could attain the way of Buddha, even though I have no skills?" And the nun answered her, "This is wonderful, my dear. In Buddhism, there are no distinctions between people. There is only this. Each person must hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate a heart of great compassion. People are complete as they are. If you don't fall into delusive thoughts, if you don't fall into delusive thoughts, there is no Buddha, no sentient being. There is only one complete nature. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn toward the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zazen." And I know many, if not all, of the people in this room are practicing that. Many of you have shared that with me, that you're looking at the source of your delusive thoughts. Chiyono said with happiness, "With this practice as my companion, I have only to go about my daily life, practicing day and night." Who knew? After months of wholehearted practice, she went out on a full moon night to draw some water from the well. The bottom of her old bucket, held together by bamboo strips, suddenly gave way, and the reflection of the moon vanished in with the water. And when she saw this, she attained great realization. And so she did what many Zen people do upon such a moment, write a poem. So her poem, "With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together. With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together, and then the bottom fell out. Where water does not collect, the moon does not dwell." I think we come to Sashin, our normal everyday mind, we're really trying to keep it all together. We're really, really, really holding on. There's got to be some way that I can hold this thing together. And Sashin is designed to mess with that mind. It is really, really severely designed to mess with that mind that wants to try to hold it together. And whether you get defeated by fatigue, you know, you're just so tired, and something in you just kind of goes, or whether you, you know, maybe through some inquiry, you release, the bottom of your bucket falls out, maybe through some reflection. Maybe it's through receiving a call across the room, "Soku, Buddha tray." I checked it out with her. She said I could use that example. I felt a little, well, it was brought to my attention that maybe I should have let the proper protocol unfold, but something in me, I think it was the ghost of Catherine. Those of you who knew Catherine know she liked to correct people right out loud, right in the middle. I mean, if you were hitting the bell wrong, right in the middle of service, she'd say, "Stop. Would you please do that over?" I'm not saying I always enjoyed that kind of training, but nonetheless, you know, we are the product of our root teacher, so something arose from this seat and I had to just say, "Soku." But also that's because we have a relationship. So please do not worry. If you are Soku for the very first time, I would never do that to you. Only the second time. This book, The Hidden Lamp, stories from 25 centuries of awakened women with commentary by contemporary women. The person who does the commentary on this, her name is Merle Kodo Boyd, and I believe she is a Maizumi Roshi heir. Yes. And Glassman. She's a member of the Zen Peacemaker community and leads a sangha in New Jersey. She says, when I first heard Chiono's verse, I had been practicing for 10 or 12 years. I was keenly aware of the constant tension of keeping the bucket together. I understood that the intent of practice was to relax my grip on the old bucket, but conditioning runs deep and the sense of personal identity is strong. Hearing the words, with this and that, in other words, when Chiono says, with this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together. You know, what is your this and that? We've all got something, trying to keep that bucket together. So for Merle Kodo Boyd, she says, I felt the exhaustion of years of vigilance, all aimed at protecting my idea of myself. I felt the exhaustion of being my own obstacle. Our Zen practice is medicine to this conditioning. All the practices within Zen challenge the illusion of the perfect bucket. Zazen, the student-teacher relationship, ritual, sangha relationships. As much as I may wish to appear competent at all times, I cannot immerse myself in Zen practice without a willingness to come apart. Sometimes it's appropriate to stop patching things together. What then allows us to leave the bits and pieces scattered on the ground like the splinters of the bucket around Chiono's feet? We are conditioned to keep the bucket from falling to pieces. Unique personal circumstances can intensify this general conditioning. I was in the first generation of Southern black children consciously raised to enter integrated schools. Can you imagine how much holding together of the bucket that would require if you were the only one under great scrutiny? In such circumstances, everything seemed to ride on keeping it together, especially in public. And so we were conscientious and hyper-vigilant in order to prevent disaster. And yet, we Zen students have chosen a path that calls us in the opposite direction. In spite of our conditioning, we are called to awareness rather than vigilance. We are on a path of no water, no moon. Our conditioning tells us this is a risky path, and yet we sense its offer of freedom and feel called to take it. I want to just give you a heads up, too. I've been doing these lectures in the style where I don't invite questions, but today's our last day, and everybody's been so diligently practicing as silence as best you can, so today I will invite you if you have questions or comments. So, just saying. But I want to say a few more things. I want to tell just a little story, and again, I got permission to tell this story. You know, sometimes the bottom of the bucket falls out also just by the course of doing the practice, just showing up and just doing the practice. And Patrick's Tongario experience, raise your hand if you don't know what Tongario is. Okay, so Tongario, and it's fine to be the only one. Yay, she raised her hand. She looked around and then she said, I'm going to raise my hand because I don't know. Before you go into the monastery, there's a period of time where you just sit. The community comes in and you do service and you have meals, but otherwise you're just sitting. There's no bells, there's no periods. So pretty much from 5 in the morning till 9 at night, except for half an hour after each meal, you're in the Zendo. And it's a ritual for 5 days, right, for 5 days. Yeah. Well, 3 at Green Gulch, 5 at Tassajara. And it's a ritual enactment of the olden days when they used to sit outside the gate and it'd be like, you know, they'd leave you out there in the snow and the rain and they wanted to make sure you were really serious about this thing. So that's our ritual that we do. And just for fun, raise your hand if you've done Tongario at Tassajara. Yeah, so just, you know, in case you're curious, after Sashin, you can ask people. But Patrick, when did you do it?
99.
99, and you'd been practicing for how long? About 10 years? Or not quite?
About 7 years.
Okay, so he went to Tassajara. He was the first, I think, in our cohort that went. And as he reported it, as the week wore on, he became increasingly convinced that Zen was not for him. He was sick of it. And he was never again going to have to pack those boxes of ratty little kitchen things and schlep them up to Jokoji Mountain Center and unpack all the buckets and wrap the little meal boards and run around with the meal boards. It's like, I'm done with it. You know, it was a good run, but it's just not something that I'm going to keep doing. He was extremely convinced. He had planned his exit strategy. And I am sure at least one person maybe in this room, sometime during this 3 days, you've planned your exit strategy. I'll sit through dinner, but then I'm going to go. I'm just going to leave a note for the Eno and just say, I can't do it. Maybe you didn't, but often that happens. And so then, you know, he's going along. He's already, okay, I'm going to leave Zen. It's over. And then on the fifth day in the afternoon, somebody came in the Zendo, said, ding, and now the Tongario students are free to go down and take the ceremonial Tongario bath. Whoa, says Patrick, I didn't know. What's this? And he got up and he walked down to the Tassajara baths, the savior of so many a monk. and he's in the bath. Oh, that water. Oh, the birds. Oh, and he's like, I'm in. Zen is great. And he never looked back. So, you know, it can be something really simple. It can be something really simple. 2. One moment, the bucket just falls out of the bottom just falls out of the bucket and you realize, I don't have to hold it all together. I can do this. But, let's save that. So then, 100 years later, there's another nun in Japan called Nyozen. And Nyozen trained at the nunnery of Tokeji. And at that time, Tokeji served as a refuge for women who were escaping violent or unhappy marriages and families. It was a safe house, essentially. And so she was studying there, and she studied Chiono's verse. So this is one of the things we do. You know, we study each other's experiences. So Chiono had her experience, and Nyozen is studying Chiono's verse, and Nyozen, her awakening, she says, the bottom fell out of the bucket of that woman of humble birth. The pale moon of dawn is caught in the rain puddles. Different experience, different person, different experience. The commenter of this one is Kuya Minogue, and she is, she trained with G.U. Kennett Roshi. That was the abbess of Shasta, one of the first Western women who was ordained in Zen. And she teaches in British Columbia, or she did at the time of this book. And her commentary, she says, it's important to notice that Chiono's realization of Buddha nature comes when she is engaged in the daily work of fetching water. Enlightenment does not erupt while she's sitting zazen. It doesn't arrive while she's chanting, and it isn't shocked into her during Dharma combat with a brilliant Zen master. Chiono's awakening arrives when she's doing samu, simple manual labor. I like to imagine that Nyozen penetrated Chiono's poem as she filled her own water bucket at Tokoji's well. In Zen literature, the moon has traditionally been used as a metaphor for Buddha, Buddha nature, or enlightenment. In Chiono's poem, when the bottom falls out of the bucket, the moon no longer shines. Something is lost, something is gone. But in Nyozen's poem, nothing is lost, nothing is gone. Both sides. You see, our grasping mind likes to grasp onto these stories. Oh, that's the answer. The bucket, the moon. Goodbye, moon. That's the answer, right? Right? Not necessarily so. Maybe it's about the moon multiplying and being reflected in every puddle. When the self is deflated or dismantled, Buddha nature appears in the 10,000 things. It appears in radish seeds as they sink roots into warming soil, in compost that emanates heat, in raindrops that ripple, tiny moons that have settled into puddles, and in full moon reflections that line up from moon edge to moon edge to create the illusion of a path of light on a windless lake. Nothing is permanent. There is nothing to grasp after and nothing to grasp with, and there is no one to do the grasping. Which kind of takes us back full circle to the mountains and the waters. This is the last day of this little 3-week thing. I've been driving this little car, practice focus, mountains and waters, and today's our final experience together. So I did want to close the speaking part of this talk with a little bit from the appendix of the Mountains and Waters Sutra. Gary Snyder, the great ecologist and Zen practitioner, playing around with a little slightly loose translation of Dogen. And you know, ultimately, you know, we all have these questions, right? People come to the Dokusan room, this is my question, this is my question. Or I will encourage you or myself to have a question, take the question out into the world, you know, and we're trying to figure out the answer to the question, but basically, there's just one answer to the question. Wake up. Just wake up. Just wake up. That's what all of this is about. All this stuff is just wake up. I could shout that if I was a proper Zen teacher. Wake up! Kind of scary. Doesn't mean it's easy, but it is simple. And Gary describes Dogen on this subject. So he talked about that one of the things that inspired Dogen to write Mountains and Waters was a poem that a Chinese poet called Su Shi wrote about the great Mount Lu, which is a sacred mountain famous for its beauty. And so this poem that was written by Su Shi that inspired Dogen to write this whole sutra. Well, this is the poem. regarded from one side an entire range, from another a single peak, far, near, high, low, all its parts different from the others. If the true face of Mount Lu cannot be known, it is because the one looking at it is standing in its midst. Trying to figure it out. But you're in it. You know, to the extent that you're struggling to try, that we're struggling to try to have this like a logical answer to the answer, it's like, you're in it. It's right here. There's nothing else. So, Su Tung Po, this is now Gary Snyder riffing. Su Tung Po sat out one whole night by a creek on the slopes of Mount Lu. And the next morning he showed this poem to his teacher. The stream with its sounds is a long, broad tongue. The looming mountain is a wide awake body. Throughout the night, song after song, how can I speak at dawn? The stream with its sounds is a long, broad tongue. The looming mountain is a wide awake body. Throughout the night, song after song, how can I speak at dawn? And so this is now Gary Snyder being Dogen saying, 2 centuries later, Dogen said, in response, again, here we are, conversation through time over centuries, you know, Su Tung Po commenting on Su Sui's poem. Now here's Dogen and Gary commenting on that. And 2 centuries later, Dogen says, sounds of stream and shapes of mountains, the sounds never stop and the shapes never cease. Was it Su who woke? Or was it the mountains and streams? Billions of beings see the morning star, and they all become Buddhas. If you, who are valley streams and looming mountains, can't throw some light on the nature of ridges and rivers, who the hell can? If you, who are valley streams and looming mountains, can't throw some light on the nature of ridges and rivers, who the hell can? Who do you think is going to do it? Who do you think is going to wake up? It's terrifying, it's humbling, but it's also ultimately, I think, profoundly the gift of our practice is that that is what it is it's one moment. It's one moment. You know, it's just that one moment. Oh, I'm being invited to go to the baths. Okay, I can do it. It's just a moment. The bucket. There's no more bottom. Or, oh, look, there's the moon reflected in every single puddle. So how about you? Whatever that is. There don't have to be words, but if there are, we have a little time.
Days I have enjoyed just walking down the pathway there, and then those purple flowers and bees doing their thing, moving from flower to flower to flower, and just a wonderful dance, a life dance, because they're getting, you know, pollen from, and then That then becomes more life for the plants as well as for the bees and for us.
That's what we're doing.
Form of honey.
That's what we're doing.
Doesn't get any sweeter.
That's what we're doing. We're just bees looking for that pollen.
We're being bees.
And we're flowers. And we're honey.
Well, it was funny Sam thought of that, because yesterday I was thinking of this kind of ecological theory that, you know, there's no bees without flowers, and no flowers without bees. So, as a matter of fact, why don't we start thinking of them as one thing? Mm. And of course, you know, that rings true with all of our practices.
Right, right.
And
So
we're all thinking about the birds and bees together here, studying the mountains and rivers. You've done a great job.
Yeah.
These 3 weeks, and of course, we give our homage to Shohaku as well for those.
And Kokyo is now initiating the new study group. Tuesday morning is going to study this book. So those who have enjoyed the beginning of that this is going to be what is going to be talked about there. Also, since you guys brought up the subject of ecology, you know, Gary in the same essay, you know, he talks about Dogen as a proto-ecologist. That actually, you know, he was studying the relationship of life and life very much in depth. And he points out, Gary does in his beautiful way, that, you know, in ecology, we welcome not just the flowers and the moon, but the parasites, the bacteria, the cancers, the baby birds eaten by snakes, the many roles in the community of life and death. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is a way to help us with some of the difficulties that we have, mm-hmm. is that, you know, life unfolding is also that. Mm. Yeah.
I just wanted to piggyback on what Patrick was saying. What was really interesting for me is as I was going on that walk, I was appreciating nature just the same way. And then I was like, oh, these roads. Look how these roads are destroying this beautiful thing that I'm trying to appreciate. And then sort of my bucket fell out when I was like, this is the activity of human life. This is humans kind of burrowing and making roads, and this is their activity. And for a moment, I saw the two completely as one and not rejecting.
What did you use to get to the Zendo from your house?
Just looking for the little speckles in the sidewalk. There was one moonlit night of Sesshin where I was walking at, like, it was probably winter, so it was dark at 8 o'clock or 7:30, and I noticed coming up School Street, you can see little sparkles in the, whatever the concrete was that they used to make the sidewalk on that side. They're there whether I think about them or not. They're always there.
Who knew?
Yeah.
I didn't. Thank you. And I know you're a dedicated Rahatsu person, and so you come here sometimes in those dark sesshins. Yeah.
One more.
Please.
With Chiono and the water disappearing, as a gardener, so much of the time I'm enjoying watching the water go into the soil, and how another, maybe part of her experience too, or I could project, mine would be, it's like, whoa, okay, it's all gone. It's all gone in a flash. Everything's gone, which is what you said, I think. Mm-hmm. Just the way the water soaks into the earth and the reflections go with it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Gone.
Gone.
Gone. It's all gone every moment.
Gate, gate. Paragate, parasangate, bodhisvaha. Ah, Stan, yes.
We live, as you know, down the stairs, and as I come up School Street, I'm always delighted to see how life breaks through concrete. You can see some of these plants are this tall, right, growing in the curb, and I mean, so there's rainwater to help it grow, but life will find a way, and that helps me in terms of our ecological crisis. We'll go on in one form or another, maybe not on land, but still, it's happened before, and hopefully we can stop it from happening. But life is so determined to find a way before it goes away and comes again. And us too.
So Chiono writes her poem, and then 100 years later, Nyozen is studying, and she awakens. And then in our contemporary time, Kuya Minogue guides her sangha to study, and they also have their experiences of opening. In the fall of 2011, the awakening of Chiono and Nyozen sparked the process of awakening in 5 women students who attended a 3-day writing workshop at the Creston Zendo, where I'm the teacher. We studied the centuries-old poems and wrote our own in response. What a beautiful practice. We could do that. You know, just studying and writing response. Note to self. We studied the centuries-old poems and wrote our own in response. To witness the birth of insight in my students as they worked with these poems was to witness the transmission of women's dharma from Chiono in the 13th century through Nyozen in the 14th century to the women I train with in the 21st century. And I wrote the poem below during that workshop. Ice crunches on the garden path. The pale moon of dawn opens the zendo doors. snowflakes melt in the heat. So maybe we could continue to generate heat here together. We had a little bit of talking just now, and, you know, the mind starts to organize itself when we start talking. But we still have... a walk, zazen, service, a quiet, nice lunch rest, a work meeting, and then we'll work and we'll really make an effort to maintain silence during work. Hard to do when you only have one more period of zazen, but that's the sweetest thing, is just to keep that container a little bit longer. And then after we work, we'll have another period of zazen completion ceremony, and then we'll be closing. So let's just keep it cooking here. Carry on. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma beings are boundless, I vow to end them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I